issues, so I felt I didn't need to continue from a personal level. Mm-hmm. I didn't need to continue with it.
Hmm.
Although my thinking did progress from there, and as I just mentioned, you know, I'm no longer a Christian, so obviously my thinking hadn't been completely settled. But
another thing I learned in the notes to the new Ed the Happy Clown is that you were actually not very politically engaged as a young man when you were doing that. In fact, you joke how you thought that, you know, waste removal would be a federal issue, not a municipal
one. Right.
And now that seems completely changed. You even ran in an election recently. Can you talk about your engagement with politics today?
Yeah. As a result of doing the Riel book, I became a libertarian. And so got involved with the Libertarian Party in Canada. And in the 2008 federal election, I ran as I ran to try to become a member of parliament, lost by a huge margin. Got only a pathetic 490 votes, but despite that, I ran in the most recent federal election, which was just a few months ago, or not even that. It was, at the beginning of 2011, and once again lost, but. I got even fewer votes than the first time I ran. But
as an anarchist, which I think you at one point described yourself in a letters column, it seemed like you were engaged in a different. I mean, in other words, a libertarian requires almost more of an engagement.
I suppose libertarianism is very similar to anarchism in that there's a huge distrust of the role of government in society, but we still see government as necessary to some degree. So
I do think it's important to point out that you got a grant for your book in terms of necessary. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
I actually got two grants from the Canada Council for the Arts, which is a branch of course of the Canadian government. The money is supplied by the Canadian government anyways. And
isn't it important for libertarians to reject those kind of grants when they're offered?
I don't see it that way. A lot of people would see it as hypocritical to say that government shouldn't give money to artists. But on the other hand, to be an artist who accepts money from the government.
There might be one or two people that think that.
But to me, hypocrisy is when you say one thing and do another. To me, the difference is I've never condemned any artist for accepting money from the Canada Council. I think government shouldn't be giving the money, but it's okay for people to take the money if the money is being given. It's the difference between giving and taking. So to me, there's no hypocrisy there, although it may look bad.
Yeah. It just seems that, since, your own experience, you were able to make this piece of art, and that grant helped make that happen.
Yeah, it worked out well for me. But I don't think I understand, particularly with this book, why there might be people who would be upset with the government.
It is pretty great that the government gave you money to go frequent escorts.
Right. And I don't think I was owed that money in any way. I took advantage of the system, but why... Why should the government?
It's just so hard to understand that, though, Chester. It really is. It's just very difficult to understand, like, how you can keep both. I mean, I'm just going in one ear and out the other. It seems like hogwash. I mean, it's like you how can you take money and admit that it's helped and it's great, and then at the same time condemn that?
It benefited me, but that money came from someone else who might have been able to use the money in a better way. I can assure you that if I was elected, I would speak out against grant fund, at least grants from the government. And
I'm sure all our every cartoonist we know now is going to get behind you on that one.
I would not be popular in the artistic community for advocating that position. But to me, that's where the test of hypocrisy would be if I actually did get elected and what I would do then.
Let's end with autobiographical comics. It seems that when you finished with Ed the Happy Clown, you obviously started doing the ones about your childhood, mm-hmm. but then you went into, two of my favorite stories were just, your roommate's situation in the rooming house. You were living in Toronto. And it seemed, again, though, that one of the main features, partly because we're talking about cartoonists who aren't very active, it's very passive. The characters are very, very passive. And again, not a lot of stuff interesting happens. There was a lot of jokes being made about the genre in the late 90s, early 2000s about how this genre had played itself out, and that like the autobiographical stories of the cartoonist who whines about not getting a girlfriend or masturbating or walking around feeling lonely,
right,
has kind of been done. And it seems that you kind of one-upped everybody and that you have an autobiographical story that's just kind of a lot of stuff happens, mm-hmm. and it's not very passive. This is not only a very different Chester Brown, in terms of this active, but it's also a story where you get to draw a lot of sex. You have a lot, right. A lot of excitement.
Mm-hmm. I hope it's exciting to readers. I personally felt like I had gone as far as I could with autobiographical stuff, and when I finished I Never Liked You. So I didn't foresee going back to the genre, with this, then I started paying for sex, and it looked like this was going to make an interesting book. Yeah.
This episode of Too Much Information is called The Difference Between Giving and Taking, a conversation with Chester Brown. It was produced by myself, Benjamin Walker, with Bill Bowen. Special thanks to Jason Siegel. Chester Brown's book, Paying for It, is published by Drawn and Quarterly. On the TMI show page, you'll find links and images, and that's where you can subscribe to the TMI podcast. All that at WFMU.org.
This is Mist, an appropriately titled band for today's weather in New York City, which is just gray and foggy and little pieces of rain falling without any conviction whatsoever. The name of this song is Twin Lanes, and it's from an album called House. And Mist is John Elliott of Emeralds, whose music I've played here in the show before, and Sam Goldberg of Radio People. And this is their third album together. And it's out on Spectrum Spools, which is a label that is run in partnership with Mego. I started off tonight with Henry Flint. Henry Flint is a very fascinating character. I think the first thing of him I heard was from New American Ethnic Music. He has like 5 or 6 volumes of it. Actually, I might get to some of that tonight. Some music recorded in the 70s. Really interesting approach on New American Ethnic Music. So all ideas about trance, but involving banjos and, you know, songs with titles like Double Spin Dizzy, Rockabilly Boogie, Hillbilly Jive, Banjo Country. Gives you some sense of his cultural landscape there. But that was Stereo Piano from 1978. From a new album, I believe it's new recordings of a piece he wrote in back then, and the album is Glissando number 1, Henry Flint, Flynt. My name is DJ Rupture. You're listening to WFMU, and the show's Mud Up. 45 minutes to go. Starting off in these mists of sounds, then we got some beats coming your way. Keep it locked. Big tune right here, Morgan Zarate, Hooked, H-O-O-K-I-D. This is the very first tune that Code 9, former Mud Up guest, Code 9's Hyperdub label dropped this year with the EPs of the same name, Hooked. Shouts to Lamine Fafana. Here, this is Cardo Pusher from Caracas, Venezuela, currently stationed in Barcelona. Shout out to Cardo Pusher. He and Pacheco and a bunch of guys are doing really interesting music. And this is Coppertone Punch from his new album, Your 15 Minutes Are Up, out on Tiger Beat 6, Shockout. And as Max, thanks for reminding me, just today I got back the copies, or we got back the copies of my Marathon Premium here at WFMU. So once again, a big shout out to everybody who contributed to the show, that special amount back during the 2 weeks fundraising marathon. And you, I believe the CDs are going out very, very soon, so I'd expect them within the week. And again, that's this it's a nice thing is coming your way. It's 3.5 hours of Maghrebi music, handpicked by yours truly, all original rips, high quality, etc., liner notes, da-da-da-da, after tropical comes arid. So be on the lookout for that. And let's just keep listening. Coppertone Punch. Cardo Pusher is a fascinating artist, actually, because when I first heard of him, he was releasing a lot of breakcore, very fast, very intense breakcore records out on a lot of French breakcore labels and whatnot, and he's just kind of been surfing the wave of musical innovation since then. And this new album, it's much more in like a funky UK funky housey kind of direction, but he's a very, very talented producer, so whatever he puts his hands on, interesting things emerge. Cardo Pusher.
New York, Philippine. Dodging.
Harlem's own Gil Scott-Heron as collaboratively remixed and twisted around by Jamie XX of the XX, and this is from their album, which is called We're New Here, after Gil Scott-Heron's I'm New Here, also released on XL, and Gil Scott-Heron and Jamie XX. And the interesting thing, I've played a few tracks off of this album, including, I think, this one, but the thing that's just so fascinating about it is the way in which Jamie XX really kind of re-envisions and completely flips the backing music, and kind of it can be hard to, especially with someone whose vocals can be so strong as Gil Scott-Heron, it takes some strong ears to bend them in a different direction and have it come out as successfully as the good tunes on this CD do. Coming up next is new material, brand new material from DJ C, who runs Match It Records and does a lot of work in Chicago. This is from his brand new album coming out, I don't even think it's released yet, called Umami, U-M-A-M-I, and this is Blaze. We'll be right back. DJ Orion from down from Texas remixing Joker. Bristol's finest, Joker. That Ain't Got No Name, DJ Orion remix. And from that sort of tech steppy, bro steppy, whatever steppy reggaeton business, we'll go back to kind of a classic refix. And this is Biggie on some reggaeton. Here you go, Mud Up. ¿Qué pasó? Costa remix. Exclusivo, tú sabes. Aquí, con la luna.
Come on. Hot, sicker than your average. Pop a quick cabbage on instinct. Don't think, stink, pink gators. My Detroit players. Tim's for my hooligans in Brooklyn. Dead right, hit the head right. Biggie there, air night. Pop a been smooth since days of under rules. Never lose, never choose to. Bruce Cruz who? Do something to us. Talk, go through us. Girls want to us, wanna do us. Screw us, who us? Yeah, Papa and Pop. Close like Starsky and Hutch. Stick to clutch. Get I squeeze three. It's your cherry and cream. Bang every MC take that. Easily.
Take
Blizzy, recently, Brian ain't saying nothing, so I just speak my peace. Keep my peace. Cubans with the Jesus piece. With my peace. Packing, asking who want it. You got it. Flaunt it. At Brooklyn, we on it. I put O's in NY, all to DKNY. Miami, D.C., prefer Versace. All Philly hoes know it's Moschino. Every cutie with the booty, boy, the coochie. Now who's the real dude? Meaning who's really the ish? Rockets, Frank White push the six on the Lexus. LX, 4.5. Bulletproof glass tint if I want some ass. Gon' blast, we first, last question class. That's how most of these so-called gangsters pass. At last, I'm rapping about blunts and bras, tits and bras, menage a trois. That's how I stay filthy, get richer than richer. So you can come and get, come on.
Tree, a boy want me bow, want me tell him to flee. I tell you it was under the sycamore.
fi stay upon the righteous side. Me nah make no boy make me walk and hide. Call me wolf, I shall not know everything me like. Me a gal we ride on your big ninja bike. Run any marathon, pin on me spike. I want my me chat pan on me stew the mic. Well it was on that sycamore tree. A boy want me bow, want me tell him to flee. I tell you it was on that sycamore. A boy want me bow, want me tell him to flee. I tell you it was under the sycamore tree. The sun stopped shining for me. A food alone going out with my hood. Big up the gal them from Dunkirk and South. All gal be bow, all of them a chat bout. All goody goody gal from Rockford. Jungle S and Rima gal of them round the road. See if you want Kingston 13 a shout. Around, 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 a 3 mile round about. Make me see the hand them. Me say it was under the sycamore tree. A boy want me bow, want me tell him to flee. I tell you it was under the sycamore tree. The sun stopped shining for me. I tell you it was under the sycamore tree. A boy want me bow, want me tell him to flee. I tell you it was under the sycamore tree. The sun stopped shining for me. Remember when we used to roar? You used to drop your hint and me think you did a girl. But me a goody goody and me never know how. And furthermore, me never decide to bow. Well, a long time, me friend them did a leak. But to me keep back, and me never want to speak. And me a girl, we go on me church every week. And me not make no boy come turn me in a freak. Me say it was under the sycamore tree. A boy want me bow, want me tell him to flee. I tell you it was under the sycamore tree. The sun stopped shining for me. Remember it was under the sycamore tree. A boy want me bow.
This is Isolate from 2003, 2004. It's a 12-inch, on Playhouse. So the information in question is spinning around 33 revolutions a minute, and I can't see exactly the details, but it just sounds great. And I have to say, on the speakers here in the studio, it's the kind of record that makes me say, who mastered this? Like, who cut this to vinyl? Great work, Isolate. And before this was Shaka Demus and Pliers, Bam Bam, well, two classic reggae tunes. So Shaka Demus and Pliers with Bam Bam, preceded by Lady Saw with Sycamore Tree on the Joyride rhythm, and that Notorious B.I.G., Biggie Smalls. It's called Kings of New York Reggaeton Refix, which brings us up to date. I think we're going to take a return into the mist coming up now. This next track I'm about to play is The Antlers, Rolled Over, from their album Burst Apart. What up? Thank you. This is another track by Mists, Dead Occasion / Ovary Stunts, from the House album that I mentioned, brand new. And before this was Mr. Henry Flint, a track off that CD I talked about earlier. That was New American Ethnic Music, Henry Flint, Volume 3, Hillbilly Tape Music. Song number 8, S&M Delirium. Probably the gentlest, most spacious track you're ever going to hear, called S&M Delirium, Henry Flint. This track is 12 minutes long. I mean, I dipped into Panda Bear for about 30 seconds, but in and of itself, this Mist song, Dead Occasion, has a lot of changes and evolutions, and I really wish we could keep on listening to it. But time is short, and we need to make the most of it. So come back again next week for more Mud Up. I'm Rupture, your host, and it is 8:01, and coming up right now is the Dave Emery Show. So thanks for listening. This was Mist, Dead Occasion, Henry Flint, The Antlers. I think we're all up to date. Okay, see you next week, and stay warm. You are listening to WFMU East Orange, WMFU Mount Hope, and WFMU.org.
Hello, my name's Dave Emery, and this is Side 1 of For the Record program number 561, titled Economics 911, Part 2, being recorded on July 16th of the year 2006. Before we get into the main body of the program, let me note that there is a vast and growing amount of information relevant to For the Record on the web, both audio files maintained both by Spitfire and by Heroic Sister Station WFMU. Those are available, and also a vast and growing amount of printed material, long article-length descriptions of the For the Record shows, old, long out of print, and copyright expired anti-fascist books. So I can't encourage people strongly enough to take advantage of the enormous amount of material on the web, because those of you who only listen to the programs are only getting a small amount of the For the Record experience. Please note also that those of you who do take advantage of this information are most emphatically encouraged to use the internet and other means of public communication to disseminate this information. That's what it's for. I don't get paid for what I do, and the idea basically is we're all in the same boat. It is sinking with great rapidity, and we've all got to start rowing and bailing. Otherwise, basically, we're all going to be shark food. So that's my advisory under the circumstances, okay? All righty, more about that time permitting at the end of this side and on side two. Now, this program, again, part two of Economics 911, is going to be dealing with some of the economic implications of not only September 11th, but related topics, the ongoing turmoil in the Middle East and some of the economic implications of same. Now, last week, we talked about the free market, laissez-faire economic philosophy of the Muslim Brotherhood and how basically it is at one with the desires of the multinational corporate globalists. And in my considered opinion, the multinational corporate community, not necessarily corporate America, but the multinationals, the transnationals, and the element that dominates them, the underground Reich, the most powerful economic entity on earth, those elements very much want to promote the Muslim Brotherhood in order to supplant state-controlled economies in various areas. Specifically, although the Bush administration is in certain respects opposing the Muslim Brotherhood, some elements of the Bush administration are actively supporting the Muslim Brotherhood, and Bush's, quote, democracy, unquote, program has led to the ascension of the Muslim Brotherhood in a variety of different societies, either their accession to total power or their significant increase in parliamentary representation. I suspect that Islamist / Muslim Brotherhood free market economic philosophies are targeted for areas like Syria, which still have a state-controlled economy, which is sort of like a hybridization of fascism and so is Stalinist socialism. So as a starting point for this discussion as well, we're going to talk about the Muslim Brotherhood, and we're going to review some of its fascistic ideology and connections. Veteran listeners will please bear with us here. I know you know about this, but this is a complicated line of argument. And indeed, For the Record is about as pedantic a radio broadcast as one could possibly want. And so in consideration of same, I'm going to repeat certain key points so that it's easier for people to keep them in mind. By the way, too, one should remember that political matters are not monolithic or simplistic. And if people are sort of confused by how elements of the Bush administration could be promoting the Muslim Brotherhood and Islamism in places like the Middle East, parts of the Middle East, and perhaps also at least some elements of U.S. intelligence appear to be backing the Islamists in Chechnya and in Xinjiang province in China in attempts to break off those mineral resource-rich parts of Russia and China, respectively. At the same time, one should not make the mistake that a lot of the conspiracy geeks, in particular the so-called the 911 BS movement, not the serious 911 researchers, but the BSers, the controlled demolition freaks and their ilk, they are maintaining that Osama bin Laden, etc., are simply extensions of the CIA. They were trained and armed by the CIA, but that was a long time ago. And we are indeed fighting a very, very real war with those same elements. It is, in certain respects, analogous to World War II, when American fighting men and women and the other allied fighting men and women were engaged in a very, very real, incredibly costly, bloody struggle against the forces of fascism, while significant elements of the world's power elites, including the Bush family, among others, were in bed with the fascists. Indeed, at the same time as the elder George Bush was being shot down by the Japanese in the Pacific, his father, Prescott Bush Sr., was basically banking money for the Nazis. One should not oversimplify this, and if some of what I'm saying seems puzzling, bear in mind what happened in World War II, because with Islamofascism, as with fascism in the World War II period, many of the world's power elite, the corporate elite, are playing ball with the very people that our fighting men and women are bloodily engaged with. So that may be something of a help. Reviewing the fascist connections and, in particular, the fascist economic, the corporatist economic philosophy of the Muslim Brotherhood, we are going to go back to the book Dollars for Terror by Richard Labeyviere. Richard Labeyviere published a remarkable book in French in 1999 and English in 2000, which in many ways not only anticipates the events of September 11th, but goes a long way towards helping to sort out some of the very confusing realities. We're going to begin here by taking a look reviewing some of the aspects of the Muslim Brotherhood. Before we get to the Brotherhood's corporatist philosophy, we're going to review some of the